Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Friday, December 5th, 2014. I'm David Knight. I'll be your host today. But I'll be joined in the next segment with Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. And we're going to have back on the show Lionel. We talked to him yesterday. He's a New York-based talk show host. And, of course, he's a former prosecutor, defense attorney. We talked to him about these grand jury indictments. And we wanted to talk to him a little bit more. It's a very good discussion there. And I think really kind of the theme today is, are we going to be a nation of laws? Or are we going to be a nuclear banana republic? Because we've got Jerome Corsi coming on later in the show, and he's going to be talking about Obama's amnesty order. Now, it was bad enough that he did an executive order just bypassing Congress. And of course, he admitted to it. We talked about that yesterday, how they tried to walk back his comments when he was being protested by some illegal aliens who were criticizing him for not going farther. And he said, I changed the law for you. I changed the law for you. Well, executive orders are not about changing the law. Shouldn't be if we're going to have a democracy. Laws originate, of course, in Congress if we're going to have a nation that is run according to the rules, according to the Constitution that they swear to. But Jerome Corsi did a little bit of digging, and he found out something very interesting. He found that Obama had not even signed his executive order. So we've had Obama signing. Remember when he signed the NDAA on New Year's Eve? And then when everybody, he said he wasn't going to sign it, then he did sign it. Then he says, don't worry, I'm not going to enforce indefinite detention by the military without trial, without due process. Remember when he said that? Do you really trust, if you trust Obama to do that, if you're a Democrat, wholly swallowed up into this false paradigm they got, and you're such a team player that you believe that Barack Obama would never do this, do you really trust the next president, who's probably going to be a Republican? Do you really trust that guy not to enforce that? We've just had the Republican House go in and do what Ron Paul calls a declaration of war, basically passing a resolution criticizing Russia as being aggressive when clearly I think we were behind a lot of the aggression, a lot of the changes that are going on in the Ukraine. Very, very reckless, provocative measure there by the House. But of course, we have a dictator who basically thinks that he doesn't even need to sign his dictates. Of course, a dictator is somebody who the law comes out of their mouth. So why would he have to bother to even go through the process of even bothering to sign his executive orders? That's the deep contempt that he has for the rule of law. And of course, we've also got the UN Arms Trade Treaty. An article on New American today says that looks like they're going to declare that that's in effect December 25th. That'd be a great day for them to do while nobody's paying attention. They enact the NDAA on New Year's Eve, then they enact absolute total gun control over all small arms, all ammunition, all gun parts, totally embargo that, require that the national government have control over all weapons, set up a national gun control registry. Hey, that's a great idea, isn't it? Let me tell you something. When you look at all of these police brutality incidents, when you look at people who are being gunned down in the street over and over again on these videos who are unarmed, do you really think it's a good idea to give the police a monopoly on the use of force? Do you really think so? I don't think so. And the bottom line is the police aren't even going to have that monopoly on the use of force. It's going to be the UN. The UN is already talking about disarming our own police. So that's where the whole thing is headed. I want to cover a couple of quick news articles before we go on. These are just kind of some side things. There's a Utah order. This is from Vox.com. Utah, the state of Utah, is ordering startups to raise their prices so competitors are treated fairly. Now listen to their rationale. They say that it's illegal for an insurance company to use their website to induce people to purchase insurance. I guess you need to coerce them in order to get insurance. That's the idea. So they say that they're giving unfair, that what they're doing is unfair to their competition because they're giving information to their customers. See, it's supposed to be kept quiet. You're supposed to be forced to buy that insurance. And if you aren't, they're going to make you do that. We'll be right back with Paul Joseph Watson. Stay with us.
take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show on this Friday, December 5th, 2014. I'm David Knight. I'll be your host today. But joining me right now is Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. As I also point out, we're going to be talking today about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. There's an article up on New American saying that the UN is saying that they're going to activate the treaty on December the 25th. There you go. That's your Christmas present. They're going to assert control over all weapons, over all small arms, over ammunition, over parts, and they want a gun control registry in every country. And of course, as Alex has pointed out, they're also looking to even disarm the police. Is it a good idea with all the police brutality that we've seen, though, to have a monopoly with government, regardless of which government it is, whether it's our federal government, our local government, or the UN? Should any of them have a monopoly on force? That's why we recognized the right of citizens to defend themselves against criminals, against criminal governments. That is a God-given right recognized in our Constitution, but they don't really pay too much attention to the Constitution. We've got Jerome Corsi is going to be joining us in the show today. Later in the third hour, he realized with his research, he's a researcher that goes down and looks at the original documents and the details, writing for WND. He noticed that this executive amnesty order that Obama put out there that bypassed Congress, that just granted amnesty, according to what they're saying, 5 million people. We don't know how many people are going to be getting amnesty because, of course, it's essentially an entitlement program as well as an inducement for people to come into this country illegally. But this executive amnesty order from Obama was put out without his signature. And he's talked and verified with the National Archives that they have not received any such order with a signature on it. So we're going to talk in depth about that with Jerome Corsi. And we've got Lionel coming back at the next segment joining us. Paul Joseph Watson wanted to ask him some questions. I pretty much dominated the questions yesterday with Lionel, who is a talk show host out of New York. He's there at the scene seeing what's happening, as well as he has a very important legal background as a former prosecutor and defense attorney. So we wanted to talk to him about the legal process. And Paul Joseph Watson has some questions for him. And Paul, you were contacted, I understand, by somebody that's a relative of Michael Brown. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, this just happened about 30 minutes ago. This is Ty Pruitt, who is Michael Brown's older cousin. He contacted me, gave me his phone number, and in fact, he's happy to appear on the show so we can set that up. And this was in response to a rant that I posted on Facebook. Basically, it was off the cuff. I was out jogging, decided to do a rant on my iPhone about what we talked about yesterday, which was not making the Michael Brown, the Eric Garner cases, all about race, mm-hmm. making them about being focused on police brutality. And the point I made was that we have a problem with violence. Violence is the issue, not race. Within the police community, the increased militarization of police forces, treating the American people as the enemy, has created this environment where violence is acceptable. And as you see police officers being exonerated for their violence, it only encourages them more. I also made the point that there's a problem with violence within the black community, because FBI crime statistics show that black people commit almost the same number of homicides as whites and Hispanics combined, even though they only make up 13% of the population. And again, is that because of their skin color? No. It's because of numerous different factors, socioeconomic as well as cultural, one of which I pointed out in the video is the fact that we have this rap hip-hop culture which glamorizes mm-hmm. violence, which of course is promoted predominantly by white-owned entertainment companies, Sony Prime amongst them. We just saw the big hack of Sony. It emerged that, as expected, some ridiculous figure in the high 90% of their owners, the highest paid people in Sony, are white males, Caucasians, and of course they're prime amongst the entertainment companies, the music companies, pushing this thug life culture which glamorizes violence. So I made all those points in a 2-minute Facebook video rant. I didn't even post it on the websites, but it got something ridiculous like 150,000 views, 5,000 shares. And Ty Pruitt, Mike Brown's cousin, saw this and sent me a message about half an hour ago saying, "Hey, brother, this is Ty Pruitt, Mike Brown's older cousin." and I've confirmed it's him. He's given other interviews to CNN. Mm-hmm. I've been saying the same thing in my interviews. And again, we haven't seen this. The dominant factor that has emerged out of this is white privilege. That was the top hashtag Twitter trend yesterday, criming while white. It was basically white people confessing their guilt, having escaped police retribution for committing minor infractions. So this was all made about race. There were actual segregations of white people not being allowed to take part in the protests in Canada and in New York. They were pushed to the edges of the protest by these protest leaders because of their skin color, even though we're all on the same side or should be in opposing police brutality.
Yeah, that's real racism, and that's manufactured racism, isn't it?
Exactly. And Ty Pruitt, Mike Brown's older cousin, contacted me and said, I've been saying the same thing in my interviews. I'm working on waking black people up to the fact of that subject. Great rant. It's not about race, but keeping us apart gives them all the power.
Yes.
So basically he's agreeing with me that by making it about race, we basically turn off half the population of the United States, which is put off by this race baiting, which has been the dominant theme pushed by the media in the aftermath of Ferguson and Eric Garner. So we're going to get him on the show, and that's going to be a good interview.
And of course, making it about race, they're doing that by design because they don't want to have a discussion about excessive force by the police. They don't want to have a discussion about the militarization of the police because it's the government that has been doing that. It's the government that's been equipping the police, training the police to behave this way. And so they don't want to have a discussion about that core issue. They want to have a discussion about race. Paul, I wanted to bring up this headline we have here on Infowars.com. It's a story from the New York Daily News. This was at the funeral of the 12-year-old boy who died this last weekend. He had been shot twice in the chest. He had a BB gun. And at the funeral, the mother said, police officers are public servants, not James Bond with a license to kill. And that really nailed it. I'm so sad to see that. And one of the things that really bothers me about both this shooting and the one in Walmart, where you had the man with the, a young man with a BB gun that he was going to buy from Walmart. He'd picked up their merchandise in his hand. And you had somebody call the police and say, we got a guy in the store with a gun pointing it at people. And so the police show up and treat it as if it's an active shooter, but they don't assess the situation. They're professionals. If somebody calls you up with a false report, are you going to be their killer for them? I mean, are we going to have people who basically call in lies about people they don't like so they can have the cops kill them for them? Or are the cops going to be trained professionals who come in and assess the situation instead of just coming in and shooting the guy? And as you can see that, the guy runs around the corner and just shoots him. And he's not pointing the gun at anybody. And they don't tell him to drop the gun either. They just shoot first. And so when we see something like that happen, when we see something like what happened with this young boy, we've had a lot of people come back and say, you know, the problem is we need to ban toy guns. That's not the problem. Racism is not the problem. Toy guns aren't the problem. And they're trying to ban guns for everybody now with this UN arms trade treaty. But that isn't the issue. It's the force. You know, even if our police don't have guns themselves, they can still choke people to death, as we saw with Eric Garner.
Well, exactly. I mean, we've seen a spate of these incidents, more like a flood. You know, kids with Nerf guns, water pistols, they shut down entire schools in these ridiculous stunts. And you mentioned, again, the violence, the militarization. If you go on YouTube and search police training, two of the top two videos that come up will illustrate this perfectly, and I'm going to make a video about this. One's out of Austin, one's out of Rhode Island. And it illustrates perfectly what we said yesterday. These police are literally being given military training. It shows them being lined up, screamed at by the police chief. Basically, they're going on frog marches in military parades.
Yes.
They're being trained to beat people up. That's the primary focus of the training. And obviously, you know, I would support police being physically active, keeping fit and learning self-defense. Obviously, it's a dangerous job. But all this training is about beating people up. And from what you see on these videos, very little of it is about knowing the actual law, mm-hmm. which then relates to this other story we've got on Infowars.com. Man arrested for video recording on private property, video recording a cop.
Again,
what we were talking about yesterday, the immediate rush to escalate the situation, this clip is 48 seconds long because the cop in this instance, this is on private property. He's video recording the cop for his own safety. He's not being aggressive. He's kept well back. And yet instantly the cop rushes over to him and arrests him. Yet in every single case where people get arrested for video recording police, it's thrown out. Even the NYPD came out a few months ago and had to remind everybody that it's completely legal to film police officers and that it's not an arrestable offense. Yet we see it happening over and over again.
And they've lost in court over and over and over again. They tried to send a guy in Illinois to jail for like 75 years because he had recorded something. They keep losing, and yet they do this under color of law. And that's what we're going to be talking about later in the show. We're going to be talking about how Obama, not only does he bypass Congress, but of course, he doesn't even bother to sign his executive orders. And then you've got Congress saying they passed the new NDAA, and somebody asked a Democrat, did you read it? And he goes, are you kidding me? I mean, they don't read the bills they sign. He doesn't sign his edicts. And we are a lawless society. We have police officers who don't know or don't care what the law is, and they're being hyper-militarized with this training. We're about to go to break, but I want to tell everybody, if you didn't see the nightly news last night, Darren McBreen addressed this black and white issue. He really knocked it out of the park. And we've got a special right now as well for Prison Planet TV subscribers. You can get a full year subscription. This is our Christmas special this year. Never done one like this before. 7 months for free if you get an annual subscription. So check that out. Every night you're going to see the kind of content we saw from Darren McBreen. We're probably going to break that out as a separate video. We'll be right back with Paul Joseph Watson and with Lionel. We're going to be talking about excessive use of police force. Show. I'm David Ide on this Friday, December 5th, 2014. Paul Joseph Watson is joining me from the UK, and we're joined this segment with Lionel. Yesterday we had him on. We had a very good discussion. If you didn't see that, that's available now on YouTube and archives, as well as on our archives at Prison Planet TV for our subscribers. If you want to see that, that's really good. We're talking a lot about grand juries, but Paul wanted to talk to Lionel. I kind of dominated the discussion, I guess, and didn't give Paul enough chance to talk to Lionel. So he had some questions for Lionel. So, Paul, you there?
Yeah.
Hey, I think we've got Lionel. Do we have Lionel, guys, on the line? Yes, good. Okay, we got him on the line. Go for it, Paul.
Yeah, I just wanted to get Lionel's take on how the media reacted to the Ferguson riots, because I was thinking of a situation, you know, imagine if back in April, Cliven Bundy had been shot by cops during that standoff, and white people, or Cliven Bundy supporters in general, had reacted by looting and burning down buildings. Bearing in mind, we had Obama meeting with the Ferguson leaders. We've got an article on Infowars.com right now. Ferguson activist who met Obama faces assault charges. He basically assaulted a security guard as he tried to get into City Hall in St. Louis. So we had Obama meeting with these people. We had Time magazine legitimizing the riots, the looting, the burning down of buildings. Now, I don't think the media reaction would have been in the same context if that situation was reversed and somebody like Cliven Bundy had been shot and his supporters had reacted in the same way that some of the people in Ferguson did. So, Lionel, I mean, you're a prosecutor, but obviously you also study media narratives. So what's your take on what I just said there?
Well, I have been in the media. And, Paul, let me just say something to you, sir. How dare you? How dare you bring up discrepancies and disparities in the way the media and society and the law deal with black and white issues? Don't you understand that we can talk about black issues, but not black and white issues, unless the white issue is an indictment? How dare you? That's the reaction. You know, Paul, you and David, but Paul in particular, I believe, brought up the notion of there is an inherent systemic problem with this mentality of a lot of police departments that push this militarization. Let me give you an example. Imagine a new couple goes to a child-rearing class, brand new parents, and the first thing out of the instructor's mouth is how to discipline a child, how to spank a child and not leave a mark, when spanking is appropriate, how to spank. Guess what those parents are going to do? spank. It's this mentality of the police department. It's this idea that civilians are the enemy. I submit that's the problem. Not that black defendants are. I forget this criming while white. So there is this inherent tutorial that's part of it. But Paul, don't you understand when you post these reviews, these scholarly approaches, pointing out the discrepancies and how black violence versus white really isn't true, you're actually a crypto racist.
No, I've got death threats over it.
Because you've told the truth. Listen, gentlemen, let me see if I can break this down. People are stupid. They're not smart. They're dense. You have to be able to handle nuance. You have to be able to handle, years ago, there was a guy on Ed Sullivan, this guy with a stick who would spin the plate and another plate and another plate. And he had four or five plates going at the same time. We can't do that. This is the American discussion. Hands up, or I can't breathe, or something along those lines. That is it. Focused, microscopic. Don't look at any other issues. We're not interested in critical thinking. No, 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 no. It's this one aspect. Let me tell you what it was like last night in New York. I have never, ever seen anything like this. I'm not talking about a pocket full of protesters here. West Side Highway, Brooklyn Bridge, Grand Central, and I don't mean a couple of stragglers, Times Square. It was huge, big, organized. I hear the music.
Yes, hang on. We're going to be right back. We're talking to Lionel. We also have Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. Stay with us. We're talking again about what's going on in New York, what's happening with police brutality. Are we going to have a discussion of the real issues, or are we going to let them distract us with this red herring of racism? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. I'm joined by Paul Joseph Watson in the UK and Lionel in New York. And we're talking about excessive police force. I'm going to go back to them in just a moment. Paul has some questions that he didn't get a chance to ask Lionel yesterday. That's why we're doing this again today, because this is a huge issue. There's a lot of different elements involved in it. So we were only able to touch on a couple yesterday. But I want to tell you before we go back, we have our Cyber Week specials still up at InfoWars Store. We have free shipping store-wide. We have silver back in stock, 20% off. You have free shipping on a limited amount, but it's going to sell out soon. And once it does, we're not going to be able to get it back for probably another 6 weeks or so. We have a Super Prep Pack, which is Silver Bullet and Survival Shield for $15 off. And if you buy four Silver Bullets, you get one for free. We also have DNA Force, where you can get two bottles of Survival Shield free at a $60 value. You get 30% off all super male and super female products. And of course, we have Prison Planet memberships that are regularly $60, are now only $30 a year. That's 7 months for free. That's only $2.50 a month. That supports our operation there, our bandwidth, supports our reporters, as well as our excellent crew that's there. That's one way that you can get the news every night. And the news last night was excellent. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at that, you can see parts of that up on YouTube. But if you have a subscription, you can see it when it happens every night, every weeknight at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's go back to this discussion as we were talking about how they're using racism to throw people off the track. I think it's really, very much like a red herring. And, of course, Paul can correct me if I'm wrong, but back in the UK, they banned, I believe, fox hunting now. But before they did that, the people who didn't like fox hunting would throw the dogs off of the trail by taking a particularly smelly fish, a red herring, and dragging it behind the direct behind the trail of the fox. So once the dogs hit that spot, that was it. They were done. And so now we've got this particularly stinky thing that we've got a long history about, racism, and they trot that out every time to get us off of the trail of the real fox, which is excessive use of force, the way they're training the police, the rules of engagement that they're giving them, even having them call us civilians. And, of course, that's something that's been programmed for a very long time, even going back to a Dirty Harry movie. That's the first time I noticed it, was in a Dirty Harry movie when I was a kid, calling people civilians. I thought that's kind of funny, but it's not funny anymore. I'm not laughing now. Gentlemen, go ahead. I'll let you ask any follow-up questions, Paul.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, obviously yesterday we covered the Garner case mainly, which, you know, I saw as a travesty of justice. I was called a cop hater for that, you know, lost friends over that. Lost friends over supporting the grand jury decision in the Brown case, got death threats over it, because I looked at the evidence that was publicly available, the three autopsies, the eyewitness reports, the eyewitnesses that changed their statements after the autopsies came out, which I thought was crucial, and the threatening behavior towards eyewitnesses before the grand jury investigation even began that came out in the police reports. So I just wanted Lionel, from his legal perspective, to break down from the evidence that's available and ask him if he agreed with the conclusion of the grand jury in the Michael Brown case.
Let me ask you something, Paul. Do you believe racism exists anywhere on the planet?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. If you answered no to that, that's a problem. Number two, do you think the case of espionage would make sense in the Michael Brown case or in the Eric Garner case? Espionage, charging the officers, Darren Wilson and Pantaleo, with espionage. Do you think that charge makes sense?
Doesn't make sense to me.
You're a racist. You're a racist. You see, you say espionage, people would say, no, that's ridiculous because there's no evidence of espionage. That's not the right charge. Ah. That's what this is about. So what you're doing is you're saying, I'm not saying there's no racism. I'm not saying the Michael Brown case was handled correctly. Now, let's change forums, Paul. Let's have a civil case, a civil jury. Now, we're looking at whether money damages should be awarded to the Michael Brown family or the Eric Garner family based upon police negligence. What would you say about that?
I would say that's more reasonable, but given the fact that this civil case in the Trayvon Martin example remains open and seems to be going nowhere, it seems the federal government isn't that interested in pursuing it, either in the Trayvon Martin case or the Brown case.
Now, the civil case in our system, as you know, for example, in this case, you have a number of different tribunals. Let's take Eric Garner. One, the state of New York in Staten Island, Richmond County, can bring a criminal case, people of the state of New York versus Officer Pantaleo. Okay, that's a criminal charge. That's a first forum. Another possibility is the family. Remember, the state of New York versus, in a civil case, it's the family of Eric Garner versus Officer Pantaleo, the city of New York, the state of New York, whatever, for money damages. The plaintiff is the family seeking money damages. In a criminal case, the plaintiff, in essence, is the state seeking justice or incarceration. Third tribunal, third possibility, an administrative hearing, which we don't hear about. Officer Pantaleo in the Eric Garner case may be bounced from the roles of the New York City Police Department because he violated a rule and an administrative rule they had about, quote, chokeholds, which I submit it wasn't, and I guess I'm a racist too. Next tribunal, the United States government, the people of the United States versus Officer Pantaleo for denying Eric Garner's civil rights. That's really tough because it would have to be evidence that Officer Pantaleo showed or indicated a racial animus. If he said, for example, I'm going to choke that whatever, that may help. So do we understand four perhaps different tribunals, same death, four separate ways of handling it? In the criminal case, Paul and David, let me ask you this. What should Officer Pantaleo have done? This is Eric Garner. In a case where he has been, people of Staten Island called the police and said, listen, this guy, Eric Garner, and by the way, have you noticed that whenever you talk about Eric Garner, you always have to say, it's a tragedy, it's a tragedy. Sorry that he died. As though you have to say this incantation. Of course it's a tragedy. But people called the cops and said, hey, I'm a taxpayer. This guy's back peddling cigarettes. It's not the crime of the century. Get rid of him, NYPD. Do your job. All right, David, Paul, we're all in the police car. We're summoned. What do we do? No. Tell those shop owners this is chicken stuff. That's not an important charge. We're not interested. Even though he's been arrested, I don't know how many times in the past, and even though store owners are saying, this guy's intimidating people. Okay, so we show up. In this scenario, Paul goes over to Eric Garner, this hulking behemoth, and says, all right, that's it. You're under arrest. David and I are your partners. I look at David and I say, I don't think I'm going to help Paul out in this one. He's on his own. And this Eric Garner, very large man, says, I'm not going, or I want to talk about this or whatever. Every rule in the police department, in the police academy, says we have to protect you, Officer Paul, partner, associate. We've got to contain this situation. We don't let arrestees negotiate. We don't do that. And if you don't like that, you're living in another world. That's the way it's been since time immemorial. There's an old expression, and I talk about it on my Twitter at Lionel Media. I've said this a million times. You can beat the rap, but you can't beat the rye. Gentlemen, what should this officer have done? Not helped out? Not try to bring this man down? Convince him? What?
Well, I think the issue is not that they arrested him over a trivial nonsense law that I don't agree with, but nevertheless, he was breaking the law. They had the duty to arrest him. They had the duty to protect the fellow officers. But when they have him down on the ground, it doesn't appear that their life is in danger. And okay, he's telling them he can't breathe and they're standing on his head. To me, that looks like what they did to Kelly Thomas, where they beat him to death over a long period of time. He might have been somebody that needed to be arrested because he was a mental case, but to do that to somebody, that says there's something else going on. Okay. When somebody breaks into my house, I can shoot them if they're coming at me, but if they're running away, I don't have the right to shoot them in the back.
Kelly Thomas, the schizophrenic homeless man who was beaten, is different because they weren't beating him. Now, in this case, we look at this video. By the way, jump cuts and edited parts removed. If we look at this, I might say, you know what? Boy, that is not good policing. Let's all agree, members of the jury. Great. Next question. Is this murder? Is this homicide? Negligent homicide? Culpable negligence? Let's assume that Officer Pantaleo, because remember, the facts are what dictate this, not racism and the history of the, but the facts of the case. In this grand jury, whether it was loaded, whether it was fixed, whatever, Officer Pantaleo stated, I either didn't hear or didn't intend to kill. I was trying, perhaps I'm the world's worst restrainer, he's bigger than I am. I suck at this. I never intended to kill. Whereas when you beat somebody repeatedly until they're in a coma, you'd be hard pressed to say that was an accident. Or if you shoot somebody like Gil Collar or Dylan Taylor or Goda or George Michael Brown.
Yet they all got off. Even when they kept beating Kelly Thomas, they still got off. They still,
right.
You know.
Well, see, and there were no riots. So what I'm saying is that I would say, ladies and gentlemen, we have exhausted. Tribunal number one, criminal. Now, let's go to the second one, a lawsuit for $75 million. I call as my first witness. I represent the family now. I call as my first witness, Paul Joseph Watson, police training expert. Mr. Watson, based upon your experience and your observation of the officer, did you form an opinion as to whether he was negligent? Did he violate the accepted standard of care in policing? Absolutely. What is your opinion, Mr. Watson? This is the most negligent, the worst fine. That's it. Because we have just overcome the slight preponderance of the evidence burden, and we have just won $75 million. That's not criminal. That's civil. So depending upon which forum, and I hate to keep being, I don't want to sound pedantic here, but there were wrongdoings. Now, let me ask you, Paul and David, did you see anything that indicated that Mr. Garner was the topic or the subject or the target of prosecution because he was black? Do we know of any, maybe there was, and we don't know this, were any racial statements made? Is there anything to indicate that his civil rights, specifically, not that he was arrested or arrested poorly, but that he was targeted because of his race? Do we have anything?
No, I don't think so. I think he was targeted because he was doing something that you're not going to find most people who are not poor. I think it was really more of an issue of him being poor and thinking he's going to do something that's in a black market area to try to do this. But, you know, when you're talking about civil suits, let me ask you this, Lionel. There doesn't seem to be any penalty involved for the police individuals in these cases, certainly not for the police department. You know, this is if they win a $75 million lawsuit, as you pointed out, that gets passed along to the taxpayers. Just like you said yesterday, in some states, there's an automatic indictment for some crimes. If it's a felony, they don't even need to have a grand jury. They're going to have a trial. Right. I think that was a great idea. I think that's something that would be a good reform that we immediately, if there's a death involved with police, and it ought to automatically go to a trial. But when we have a civil case and there's money taken out, it seems to me if we're going to try to achieve some kind of systemic reform, there has to be a penalty that the system pays, that the police department has something taken out of their budget, at least a huge percentage of that fine that's going to come out, comes out of the police department budget or something like that to try to make them reform, put some pressure on them.
That would be interesting. If you said, for example, okay, members of the Garner family, what would you like? $75 million from the public treasury? No. I want 75% of the overtime budget to be, you know, that would get people's attention. That's a different one.
Yes.
It's very interesting. But in this case, though, let's go back. There was a police officer years ago, Officer Francis Lavoti, who did federal time because he basically went and choked out this guy who gave him some lip. And it wasn't an arrest. It happened. So what I'm saying right now is, once this meme gets started, once we look at this case, people will say, this will have to be our case that we're going to make all the changes on. I kind of alluded to something last night. I've never heard or seen the amount of helicopters and drones. I don't know if I'm seeing things, but we saw some stuff flying around that was most unique. Now, tonight is going to be probably the last night before the weekend. And the police, knock on something, have been very good in not losing it, you know, and the protesters as well. But here is my question. And Paul, I'm going to tell you right now, I might be a racist as well for what I'm going to suggest. In the 60s, when you saw Dr. King, and when you saw Jesse Jackson, the Younger, and others get together, they made specific plans. They had an agenda. They had goals. While we see people showing protests all over the country, what is your goal? What do you want? Don't say stop killing unarmed people. That's generic. What do you want? The first thing that we must very simply do, all of us, write this on your, and I mentioned this at Lionel Media on Twitter. I mentioned this. Wonderful hashtags. Mandate a special prosecutor every time there is a cop killing of a civilian.
Yes.
Bring a prosecutor from someplace else who can do this without fear of reprisal.
Excellent idea. I think that's the key. People get frustrated with this. If they don't have any goals when they protest, they just get even more frustrated. And then, of course, you're going to have some people who use it as an opportunity to go kick the cat. We're going to be right back with Lionel and Paul Joseph Watson. Stay with us. Back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. We have Paul Joseph Watson in the UK joining us in this last segment, and also Lionel in New York. And I've had several people come through and hand this to me, so I need to point this out. There's an article that's up on Infowars.com. The entire racism narrative that we've been talking about, how they've spun this away from what really needs to be talked about, which is how do we reform the way the police are conducting themselves towards the public. That entire racism narrative is put in to stop that discussion. But that falls apart when you look at the fact that what happened to Eric Garner was supervised by an African-American female New York City Police Department sergeant. Had no problem with that happening. So Obama's solutions of cameras to record everything, that's not going to change anything. Obama's solution of having racial quotas in police departments that are mandated or controlled from Washington, that's not going to change anything. But I want to go back to Lionel while we've got him. Lionel, there was also another police shooting just this last weekend. Of course, the Mr. Gurley who was killed in the projects, there were two cops, a veteran cop and a rookie cop, doing a top-down patrol in a project building. The rookie cop had his gun out as Mr. Gurley and his girlfriend entered the stairwell. They got tired of waiting for the elevator. The rookie cop shot him, from testimony that's come out so far, without warning, shot him in the chest, and it sounds like they left without calling for emergency help. So there was there were some protests on Monday. We had some people who threw some fake blood on the police commissioner. I'm sure that's a factor in these demonstrations that are going on in New York now as well.
Yes. In fact, it was also today's Daily News had a piece in which they suggested that one of the police officers, or the shooter perhaps, again, alleged shooters allegedly did this, but might have been on the phone texting his union rep rather than calling for emergency backup.
Wow.
Now that's also, this goes to show you, so is that racism? Is that incompetence? You know, one of the problems I have to understand is, you know, Paul and David, when you are assigned to a particular area as a police officer, where there are more drugs, there is more crime, there is more robbery. Now, hear me out. In an area, a sector, I don't know what you call it in the UK, Paul, but a precinct or a city or a unit area, in a particular locale, and we're going to go in there. And I tell you, by the way, we're going into this new place. It's in Kensington. I don't even know the name. And there's more robberies and rapes and drugs and whatever. What can you tell me about that place? Is that going to be an affluent place based upon the number of crimes reported? Or is that going to be a poor place? What do you think based upon the statistics without even stepping foot in that area? What would you guess?
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I mean, that's the point that many prominent black speakers have made, that the 911 calls are coming from the crime-ridden areas, obviously. So that's where police need to go. That's where they're called out. That's where they're going to go.
So, why do you think, and let's assume they're poor, people of color, African Americans, Latino, not Park Avenue, not, you know, whatever, Beverly Hills, or whatever the particular. Now, if that's the truth, so isn't the issue, well, why are black people or poor people or Latino people living in such areas? Why is there so much crime there to begin with, before the police even enter this? Why is that? So I hate to belabor the point, but this goes back in dissecting your argument. If we are tonight going to patrol New York or Austin or London or wherever it is, The majority of our calls, I guarantee you, are going to come from the place where there's most crime, and they tend to be poorer. So that means that our interaction with the poor, by definition, is going to be greater than our interaction with the high and mighty. Does that mean we're racist?
We're going to have to leave it with that rhetorical question, Lionel. Thank you so much for joining us from New York, and Paul Joseph Watson from London. Stay with us. We're going to come back at the top of the hour with Joe Wolverton from The New American talking about the U.N. Arms Trade Treaty.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today on this Friday, December 4th, 2014. Now, in the next segment, we're going to be joined by writer Joe Wolverton from The New American, talking about the U.N. Arms Trade Treaty that they say they're going to put into effect on Christmas Eve. So we're going to have a discussion with him about that, what's behind that, how we should react to that. Because, of course, a treaty that violates the Constitution should not be a treaty that is in effect. We don't have dictators who have authority over the Constitution. They swear allegiance to the Constitution. The Constitution, if you will, is the king. The law is the king. That particular law is the king. They are merely stewards who come and go. So they do not have the right to appoint another king. When they do, that's a treasonous act. But of course, we see them do things under color of law all of the time. And so it's very worrying. I mean, of course, so we've got Obama, who does a blanket amnesty on immigration and says that he's going to do things in the environmental area, and Republicans aren't going to be able to stop him, even with their bigger majorities. So he is intimidating them and intimating that he is going to pursue executive orders in many areas in these last 2 years where he doesn't have to stand for reelection. So that brings up a big question, and what is it? What are the laws based on? How are we going to pull these guys back who are acting criminally, who are acting outside of the law? And of course, we've got Jerome Corsi joining us in the third hour, looking at Obama's executive order and finding out that he didn't even bother to sign it. Not only did he bypass Congress, but he creates this edict and doesn't even bother to sign it. That's how contemptuous he is of any legal process. We truly do have a dictator and a banana republic with nuclear weapons. It's a very dangerous situation. And that kind of corruption has found its way, that kind of lawlessness has found its way all the way down into the excessive use of force, the rules of engagement, if you will, the militarization of the police, the fact that they don't care whether or not you have a right to record them in public. They have over and over again continue to arrest people, even though it has been held up in court after court that, yes, of course, we do have the right to film in public. There's no expectation they watch everything we do. Now, speaking of watching everything we do, we have a Kit Daniels article up about Google. Julian Assange, who watches them very closely, watches what's happening on the internet. He believes that Google is going to back Hillary Clinton for president in 2016. That's an article up on Infowars.com right now from Kit Daniels. And it's interesting to look at some of the politics here that's going on. Hillary Clinton had this video of a cowboy singing. They're portraying this as if she's trying to go for the male vote. I mean, this is like a country and western video with all the clues in there, the pickup trucks, the rural setting, this guy with a beard and a cowboy hat and singing and talking about, you know, this is one of her commercials that they're putting out there. And as I point out, it's kind of cringeworthy. And I'm thinking, is that really going to get her support among men? I mean, they can't really be that clueless. And as I started to think about it, I thought, I don't think that's really targeted towards men. I think that's really targeted still towards her feminist base. I think she's putting something out there that these urban liberal feminists really want a cowboy boy toy. I think that's my bottom line on this. So we'll see what you guys think about that, because we'll be taking some of your calls in the third hour. Also, we've got a runoff coming up in Louisiana. Senator Mary Landrieu is the senator there. Looks like she's not going to win, as the New York Times puts it very well, I think. Her Democrat base has eroded like a cheap levy. Yeah, I see that happening. But we're going to be right back after the break. We're going to be talking to Joe Wolverton from The New American about this UN arms trade treaty. This is something that's being developed a long time. This is very dangerous. This goes after every facet: ammunition, parts, registration, confiscation. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined with Joe Wolverton from The New American. We're going to be talking about the UN arms trade treaty. We're going to be talking about not only the scope of it, but also the legality of it, what we can do to push back against it. And this is something that's been developed for a long time. They've been trying to sneak this in. I was involved with a gun rights group that was, and I was there in July of 2012 when they were trying to push this through. And of course, in the lead up to that, we had the Aurora shooting, and that just had false flag all over it. I mean, when you've got a guy who has basically been deeply embedded in psychological studies funded by the U.S. government, and somehow all of a sudden a guy with no experience whatsoever with weapons has rigged his house like a Navy SEAL. They find him after the shooting in kind of this spaced out state next to his car, and he tells him, my place is rigged, is booby trapped or whatever. If he was going to do that, why would he warn them about that? And of course, the shooter, or as we heard some people believe there were multiple shooters, got in through a side door that was kind of jacked open into the theater. There was just so many suspicious things about that. And you know what? That narrative wasn't working. When I was there in July, the UN knew they were not going to be able to get this passed. They couldn't sell this to the public. There was a huge pushback. People were even more adamant that even if they were going to buy this narrative that was being sold to them about this lone wolf crazy shooter, they wanted guns to protect themselves. So it wasn't working. They said, we're going to wait until after the American elections. That November 4th, they came back and said, as soon as it was evident that the Democrats had picked up seats in the Senate, they came back and said, we're going to revisit this next year after the new senators are seated, which in fact they did. They still did not get it passed, but they had John Kerry, Secretary of State, sign it. Now, what difference does that make? A treaty has to be ratified by the Senate, and a treaty cannot conflict with the Constitution or with our fundamental God-given rights. And I think that's one of the points that Joe Wolverton is going to talk about. We're going to talk about the scope of this, what it's going to mean if we allow this to go through. And of course, we're going to be talking in the third hour to Jerome Corsi, because he discovered the amnesty edict that came from our dictator Obama was not even signed. That's why I say he's a dictator. You understand that dictator comes from the Latin to speak, right? In other words, the law is in his mouth. The law is whatever he says. He doesn't need a Congress. He doesn't even need to sign his executive order. He just makes the pronouncement and lets people implement it. And of course, there's some discussion as to what's his motivation behind that. Is he trying to distance himself from impeachment, allow Jay Johnson at the Department of Homeland Security to take the heat for this illegal action? Well, I don't know. We'll talk to Jerome Corsi. We'll get his take on it. Looking at some of the news today, as I mentioned, we've got a story up from Kit Daniels. Julian Assange believes that Hillary Clinton is going to be backed by Google. He points out that Google has very strong ties to Clinton. And, of course, these are people who have looked at a lot of the emails. I really would like to see who Guccifer thinks is going to be the next president, because he's the guy that's been reading their private email going back and forth. And he's had some interesting takes that have come out of that. As I mentioned in the first hour, there was an interesting story, and I got to it right at the end of the segment as we're going to break. Didn't have much time to talk about it. The state of Utah has ordered an insurance company startup to raise their prices because their competitors are not being treated fairly. In other words, they've got competitive prices out there in the insurance that they're putting out there. I thought that was the whole point of the affordable health care, right? Wasn't that the whole point? You know, we were told when Hillary Clinton was trying to shove health care down our throats as an unelected first lady, she said, you know, the problem with rising prices is we've got too much competition. We need to have a single payer system to get the price down. Now, that's exactly, works exactly the opposite, doesn't it? Well, now here's the rationale that Utah has. They say that a Utah regulator says that offering free access to the website of this insurance company violates state insurance laws, which makes it illegal for companies to offer inducements to purchase insurance. They never really wanted you to look at the Obamacare website, the affordable healthcare website. They never wanted you to look at that. They don't want you to understand what's going on. Gruber's made that apparently, evidently clear. As I said before, we ought to make it a verb to Gruber something, to torture the data so that you can deceive. We ought to call that Grubering. We can use that in a lot of different ways, make the guy a verb. But here you got a situation where state legislators are saying, no, don't give people to your website. Give free access to your website. They could actually shop and look. And you're offering lower prices than your competitors. See, this was never designed to get us affordable health care. This was designed to mandate that the public buy insurance that they can't afford and don't need from the insurance companies. This was a handoff to the insurance companies. This was never for you. And one of the things that points this out, I think, is in this Utah thing, they say you cannot offer inducements to purchase insurance. You can't let people look at the insurance rates. So regulators say that Zenefits, that's the company, is giving away access to its website, and that's unfair to other insurance brokers. And they're also offering lower prices. We can't have that happen. And that completely, see, they're trying to make healthcare unaffordable. They're trying to make profits for the corporate insurance companies. That's why they don't want you to be able to look at the insurance prices on the website that they put out there. That's why they don't want you to look at it in Utah. It's the state. It's also the feds. And then, of course, there's this quote from Sebelius out here. Americans don't like Obamacare because their financial literacy is low. No, Gruber was telling us that he was taking advantage of people's financial illiteracy. He was saying they don't understand that if we add fees at the corporate level, they're not going to understand this stuff. They were using people's financial ignorance to sell Obamacare. That's what it was all about from the very beginning. When you have Hillary Clinton making pronouncements like she did 20 years ago, saying that, you know, we can't have competition. That's causing healthcare to be too expensive. We can't have so many doctors out there because that raises the price of doctors. Look, I don't care what it is, whether it's widgets or whether it's brain surgeons. If you've got more of them out there, unless they organize themselves into some kind of a monopoly using the government, that's how monopolies always operate. They always get the government to come in and give them a monopoly. Here's another example of that. We've got the Small Business Administration that is supposed to help to level the playing field for small businesses versus the large competitors. Do you think that the American government is really going to do that? Do you think the Small Business Administration is really interested in helping small businesses, or are they interested in helping the big businesses? I've had in interviews on the nightly news, I've talked to someone who's made this point. He's filed lawsuits against them. He's exposed this over and over again. Here's the stat from this article here from, this is David Stockman's website. In 2009, the top 10 lending institutions swallowed up roughly one quarter of all the SBA loan guarantees. You understand that? The top 10 big banks got a quarter of all the loan guarantees. And it's even worse than that. It's not just that the big banks are getting all the money and then loaning it out. They're always doing that. They're getting interest-free loans to pay back not only the bailout money that they got, but getting interest-free loans and then loaning it out to people on home loans and auto loans at 4, 5, 6%, then loaning it out in credit cards at 20, 30, 40, 50%. But no, the loans themselves are going to the biggest companies. It's not going to the small companies. The vast majority of the loans are going to the very largest companies. We see this happening all the time. That's what the government always does. It's called regulatory capture sometimes, but it really is just crony capitalism. It's corruption. They use the government to shut down their competition. The bank bailouts did that to shut down their competition. Look at how many small banks failed. I remember Drudge Report used to have, you know, every year, another 150 banks or whatever went out of business. Small banks went out, and it was a running total, and it was going up on a yearly basis. It's going down now because there's not that many more of them around to drive out of business. Of course, if you want to look at how this plays out, Monsanto and the FDA is a good example of this. We have an article up on Infowars.com today. Monsanto pulling illegal vote counters into the Oregon GMO recount. Remember when we had the election, we talked about how it was unfortunate that the labeling law narrowly lost in Oregon? Well, actually, it didn't. Okay. It's right now, there's only 812 votes between the no and the yes sides on the labeling debate in Oregon. So what are they doing? What is Monsanto doing? Well, Monsanto and the large corporations that want to keep you from knowing what's in your food have been bringing in people from out of state as observers. It's one of the many ways that they game the system. And of course, they have been paying to play, I should say, donating 4 to 5 times the amount of money that the organizations who are trying to get labeling out there have, and basically lying to the public. And if they do it enough, I think they've got it down to a science. It looks like if they put out about 4 to 5 times the amount that their opponents are able to spend, they seem to be able to pretty regularly pull this off. And they, at the beginning, when they were first fighting these labeling laws, they were putting a lot of money in, but then they pulled it back to just about 4 or 5 times. And in Oregon, it went from an overwhelming majority of people who supported just honesty in knowing what's in your food. Can't I just know what's in my food? We can have this discussion about what GMO actually means to my health, but why are you hiding the fact that it's in there if it's something that isn't harmful for me? We have labels about everything. So they lie to them and they tell them that, oh, this is going to be horrible. It's going to drive the cost of everything up. Look, they redesign their labels all the time just for marketing decisions. But they also point out in this article, of course, and we've talked about this right after the election, the way they got shut down was by an educated electorate in Hawaii. Even though they spent over $8 million in Hawaii to try to do GMO farming there, it didn't sell. They weren't able to use their propaganda there because people understood the issue. It really is an educational issue, and it's a long-term issue. That's where they've had success in the GMO shutdowns, is where they stop the farming of GMO because the people know what's going on. We'll be right back. Stay
this
with us.
Hour.
Don't worry. This show is documented. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to be joined in the next segment with Joe Wolverton, writing for The New American, talking about the UN Arms Trade Treaty, a very comprehensive piece of gun control. Of course, it was not ratified by the Senate. Of course, it conflicts with the Second Amendment, but we have seen all kinds of crazy stuff being done by our government under color of law. We've got Obama announcing an executive order, yet nothing was ever signed or filed. That's research done by Jerome Corsi. He's going to be joining us in the next hour to talk about that and the meaning of that. Of course, I think it clearly makes it obvious that we've got a dictator in office. He doesn't think he even needs to put his orders in writing. He just needs to speak them. But of course, it's a little bit more subtle than that. That's one of the takeaways to come out with it. But we've also got House lawmakers are going to reintroduce a bill to limit the NSA backdoor spying. We'll see. I don't know. I don't see that they really want to do anything about this, of course, because we've got people violating the law from the NSA down to the police departments. The Department of Justice is violating the law. We've got the IRS violating the law. We've got a president who signs executive orders. If you are so captured by this Democrat-Republican false paradigm they put out there, it ought to scare you to death to think about the other guys getting in charge. Except the thing is, they're all on the same team. As we point out over and over again, we even had the bumper as we came in earlier in the show of the comedian pointing out, you know, what's the, we got the puppet on the left, we got the puppet on the right, and look, that's the same guy controlling both of them. We got George Bush. This is a article that's up on Drudge Report. George Bush says, Hillary Clinton is like my sister-in-law. He just called Bill Clinton his brother from another mother. As Alex has pointed out, I don't know the genealogy as well as Alex does, but he points out that's quite literally close to the truth. So it's the same group of people where it looks like we're going to possibly have a Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton. Isn't that repulsive? Doesn't that make you just want to throw up? I mean, it makes me want to throw up. It scares me, too. Except it's not really going to be that different. You know, when we looked at the choice that we were given with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, you realize, of course, that Peter Gruber was given a shout-out by Mitt Romney for helping him to push through RomneyCare in Massachusetts, which was so identical to Obamacare that eventually came through. And, of course, Romney did that with the help of Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts. That should have been a warning for everybody that we were going to get the same thing regardless of who we elected. It was just a different face. You know, do you like this young white guy or do you like Captain Underpants on the other side? I mean, what's your choice? You like this dashing traditional, the fighting whiteys. Isn't that what Mitt Romney looked like? But anyway, you could pick the guy that you thought matched your personal taste, because we can't even really have a discussion about excessive use of police force or police violating the law without it being taken over by racism. And as we pointed out earlier, it was a black female sergeant who oversaw the smothering or the heart attack that was induced on Eric Garner and had no problem with it. You're not going to see this change by electing a woman or a black or a white guy. It's what's behind it. You have to look at their policies. They're using that to throw you off of the trail. Now, in the next segment, we're going to be talking to Joe Wolverton about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. We have an article up on InfoWars about another approach to gun control. 38 billion reasons the Second Amendment is crumbling, and it's Bloomberg's money, the billionaire Bloomberg, lavishing money on these initiatives in the same way that Monsanto and the big agri companies lavish money on these other initiatives to prevent people from knowing what's in their food. They're trying to take our fundamental rights to protect ourselves individually from criminals and collectively against an unconstitutional government. Those are rights that supersede the Constitution. But, of course, Bloomberg has a lot of money. They point out that he's reportedly spent as much as $50 million from his personal funds in just the 2014 elections. If you go back and you look at even David Clark, we've interviewed him on this show, a black sheriff from Minneapolis, very supportive of gun rights, telling people, honestly, I can't be there when something happens. You need to be armed. You need to be trained. Make sure you know how to use the gun, but I can't be there for a long time. We'll try to get there as soon as we can, but you have the responsibility to protect yourself. Bloomberg tried to take him out of office with $500,000 spent on a sheriff's race. He's got a lot of money, and he's going to throw it at this. He's got a different agenda. We're going to be right back talking about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. Stay with us.
Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
We'll be fighting in the streets. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to be joining Joe Wolverton in a moment to talk about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. But before we do, I want to let you know that we have Cyber Week specials. I don't know how much longer these are going to go. I think it's just this week, but I'm not sure. I don't have that information. But right now, we have free shipping store-wide. So take advantage of that while it's available. We have Silver back. Silver Bullet is back. Take advantage of that while it's available. We have 20% off of Silver Bullet as well as free shipping. If you buy four of them, you get one for free. And, of course, there's also a Super Prepper Pack. Silver Bullet and Survival Shield for $15 off. You also have the Prison Planet membership available now on sale. This is our annual Christmas sale, but we've never had it like this before. You get 7 months for free. It's now only $29.95 for a one-year subscription. That's only $2.50 a month. It helps to support our operation, of course. That's where I normally am. I was on the nightly news along with Darren McBreen and Leanne McAdoo, Jakari Jackson, Rob Dew, and, of course, our reporters and crew that are there. That helps us support our operation, and you can share that every night. We're here at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with the news. You can share that with 20 other friends. That's up as well. Used to be that it was only 12. Now it's 20 people can share that, and 7 months for free. That's only $29.95, a Prison Planet membership. We also have DNA Force, where you can get 2 bottles of Survival Shield free, a $60 value. Super Male and Super Female, 30% off. And, of course, it's all free shipping right now as part of our Christmas sale. Now, as I point out, we're going to have Joe Wolverton joining us in a moment. I think we're having a little bit of problem with the phone there. If you want to call in and comment about some of the things that we've been talking about earlier, our number is 800-259-9231. And we're going to definitely, if we get in touch with him, we're still going to be taking calls at the top of the hour. But if you want to call in now, we'll take your calls. We're going to have in the third hour, Jerome Corsi, talking about Obama's amnesty executive order that he didn't even bother to sign or file. Truly a true dictator. Now, there's an article up on Infowars.com right now. DARPA is getting close to an Iron Man suit. Yeah, that's everything that you look at that DARPA is doing really bothers me. And as I look at this article, you know, I think they're actually getting closer to being Hydra. That's the thing that really scares me. It isn't so much that they've got an Iron Man suit or they've got an exoskeleton suit or they got robots. It's the character of the people who are running the military industrial complex. And the fact that they try to sell this stuff as, you know, they come in peace. This is for the benefit of mankind when they have the DARPA robot contests and everything. It's like, look, you're not fooling anybody. We understand what your mission statement here is. It's about developing weapons. And when I see them developing a robot that can run faster than any human being, I don't believe that they're going to use it to go turn off the stuck valve on a nuclear reactor somewhere, okay? I wasn't born yesterday, and most of our people aren't either. They say the Army doesn't have an Iron Man suit yet, but the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, their Warrior Web program is a step closer to developing a soft, low-powered exosuit that will augment the physical capabilities of soldiers. And, of course, we've seen some crude examples of that in some other military organizations as well. But they're going to go full-on Terminator. And as I pointed out yesterday, you know, it's strange enough to see that they've got Terminator that looks like, as everybody is getting concerned about the advances in AI, we've got people like Elon Musk, we've got Stephen Hawking all saying, look, AI could very easily get out of control and end the human race, the Terminator scenario. I mean, we see that coming true. And then if that's not bad enough, we see them even going to replicating Pinky and the Brain, sticking human brain, you know, augmenting mice brains with human brain cells and increasing their intelligence. I mean, this is really getting absolutely crazy. About as crazy as our government that operates by executive order and not even bothering to file the paperwork. Let's go to Dan in FEMA, let's see, what was that, six, whatever. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, David. Hi. Thank you very much for taking my show or call. Yeah, I'm up here in Region 5. Mm-hmm. Listening to what you're saying, kind of twofold. Real quick to cap on what you're saying. Some of this, maybe I should say, maybe I shouldn't. I was stationed at Fort Irwin, California, out of Mojave Desert, 88 to 92. Now, it, going back some time, at that time, playing mock wars, there was a building that we called Op 4. We called the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy enough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we've seen these articles on Drudge Report how they're working up for laser weapons from space. Go ahead.
Now during that time period, there were 3 satellites dedicated, only 2 Fort Irwin. Says that the commanding generals of the Blue Force, the people that we're training at that time, would be for Desert Storm, could watch a brigade level fake war go on.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a lot of equipment that they're not telling us about. Just think about how rapidly they deployed the drone program after 9/11. When you stop back and think about that, I mean, they didn't want people to think about the fact that they could remotely control aircraft, even though going back to the 60s, they had Operation Northwoods, where they had proposed drone airplanes, commercial airliners, flying them into buildings, staging other terrorist acts so they could use it as a pretext to go to war against Castro in Cuba. But we're not told about that in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. No, when we have September 11th on 2001, nobody's thought about drone-controlled planes being used as weapons or as a false flag. But after 2001, guess what? It only took about a month for them to have this entire drone army that their Air Force that they're using in Afghanistan. It just appeared out of nowhere. Isn't that interesting how these things just come up at a convenient time? I'm going to hold the rest of your calls to the top of the hour because we just got a hold of Joe Wolverton with The New American. A featured contributor there, his articles on the Constitution, states' rights, NDAA, drones, surveillance state have appeared in national, international publications, including LouRockwell.com, Ron Paul Forums, the 10th Amendment Center, our site, InfoWars, Guardian, and Business Insider. And, of course, he's got an article up today about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. It's something that I've been following for a long time. Thank you for joining us, Joe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Lay out for people what the real problem with the UN Arms Trade Treaty is, and then we can talk about how they're trying to push this on us and the constitutional issues. But talk about the substance of it right now.
The substance of it is it requires the registration of all ammunition, arms, and component parts. It gives control over those to regional departments of the United Nations. It requires member states, meaning the United States included, to keep a list of gun owners. It empowers the United Nations to send troops in to enforce disarmament should any member state find it difficult to disarm its citizens. It requires tracking to the end user of the manufacturing by the manufacturer of any firearm, ammunition, or component part. And at the end of the day, it will lead to the complete disarmament of the civilian population.
Yeah, this is full spectrum gun control. They're not looking at something and saying, well, you know, we're going to ban guns that we think looks, we're going to call them assault weapons and say that they look scary. So, you know, if you've got a bayonet attachment on the end, we're going to ban that. No, it's not piecemeal like that. It is everything, everything. Denying the right to own guns, taking out ammunition, taking out spare parts, as you point out, creating this massive registry and demanding that no one can own anything associated with a firearm.
Right, and under Article 16 of the Arms Trade Treaty, it does empower the Secretary General to deploy peacekeepers to any nation whose leaders or legislative body finds it difficult to disarm. So that's Article 16, and it will help that leader or that nation with what it calls stockpile management, disarmament, and demobilization.
Oh,
so
wow.
you can interpret that the way you think it should be interpreted.
Well, the way I interpret that is Lexington and Concord, because they went after the stockpiles there. What's that?
Yeah, you're the first one. You're the first one who's really caught on to that. You know, when the bullets started flying at the War for Independence, it was because King George's troops were coming for the ammunition.
Man, yeah, absolutely. This is full spectrum. Now let's talk about how they have manipulated this thing from the very beginning, because they had come up, and we know even the New York Times pointed out that Fast and Furious was set up to blame the Second Amendment. And, of course, a key part of Fast and Furious was to move guns across the border. And so that's exactly what this purports to take care of. That is the rationale for having to have a UN arms trade treaty, because it's not enough that we just have this problem as they perceive it in America where individuals can own guns. No, our guns are going across the border to other people. So that was a set piece. That was something that was set up to basically get the public afraid of this, to demonstrate the need for it. And it blew up in their face. I was there in July in New York at the United Nations. We were filming that. were reporting on that, and they had the people there. It had just blown up about this officer getting killed, and people had realized what was going on with Fast and Furious. So that blew up in their face. And then, of course, they have the shooting that was perfectly timed just as they were about to have the vote. So they delayed all of that until after the election, they said. They didn't wait very long. On the very day of the election, as soon as they saw that the Democrats were going to be picking up seats, they said, we're going to revisit this back in the spring after the Democrats are in Congress. And, of course, Joe, they didn't get that ratified by the Senate. Nevertheless, John Kerry, Secretary of State, signed it. So talk to us about the constitutionality of all of that.
Well, I mean, the constitutionality is there is none. There is specifically the Second Amendment says, as you know, and all of your viewers know, shall not be infringed unless there's armed violence, shall not be infringed unless there's a mass shooting. It's shall not be infringed. And the thing that most people, most good, well-intentioned constitutionalists and lovers of liberty don't understand is the Second Amendment has nothing to do with self-defense in the narrow way. It has self-defense in the wider Lockean way. That is to say, when the government becomes abusive of your rights, it is your duty and your obligation and your right to throw off that government. And at the end of the day, our founding fathers understood that the Second Amendment had nothing to do with protecting yourself from burglars. It had everything to do with protecting yourself from tyrants. And the United Nation, no one is more tyrannical in its conception and in its operation than the United Nations. And they understand, they have learned the lesson of history. You know, a gun without a bullet is just a club.
Yes.
So go for the ammunition. And I'll tell you the story of I was invited by the ambassadors of Mexico and Spain to speak at the convention where they finally where they were drafting the arms trade treaty back in March of, I think it was 2012. And I went to that and spoke there at their little meeting on behalf of the Second Amendment. And these guys understood very well and made no uncertain terms that the goal of this ultimately is disarmament. But the way to get there, the best way to get there, is to focus on the ammunition.
And yes,
they specifically, something that most people don't know, and I've written about, but to my dismay, it hasn't gotten enough traction, which is the fact that it is the ammunition. And at this meeting of the Mexican and sponsored by Spain and Mexico there at the UN, they mentioned specifically that they were working on, in Germany, they were working on technology that was a tiny chip that would be implanted in every round. And that chip would be required by international law to be used by every manufacturer of ammunition. And that chip would cause the round of ammunition to self-destruct after it had been used one time. Mm-hmm. Meaning the end to all reloading, of course.
Yes. And we're talking about reloading. At the very beginning of the Obama administration, they've understood that that ammunition is the key thing. As you pointed out, a gun without ammunition is just a club. At the very beginning of this, they started out by not allowing the U.S. military to recycle their brass. Remember, they pulled that back, and then there was a couple of senators who came back and fought against that. And then a couple of years later, we uncovered some evidence that showed that they were still at a New York fort, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but they were still recycling this brass in terms of crushing it and selling it to China as scrap, spending money to crush it, selling it to China as scrap metal for far less than they could sell it back into the American market, which is what the military has always done with their scrap brass. So they get rid of the brass. They start making lead illegal in California. They want to do that nationwide. They want to outlaw lead ammunition. So they understand not only as a full spectrum attack, not just this UN arms trade treaty, but they want to get even to the components of ammunition. And as you pointed out about the Second Amendment, it's about it references infringement, because I think they always visualize that this is going to be a gradual process. And it has been a gradual process of infringement until now. Now they're getting very bold. With this UN arms trade treaty, they're going for the whole enchilada. As I said, full spectrum, gun control, all components, all aspects of it.
And people don't realize, you know, everyone says, well, if the blue helmets come for my gun, they'll pry it from my cold dead fingers. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the blue helmets. It'll be your local law enforcement that has been co-opted by the federal government.
Yes.
I mean, we are seeing now that with the Department of Homeland Security and with the Department of Defense giving grants and the Homeland Security creating fusion centers, the local law enforcement is something that just doesn't exist anymore. They're all simply outposts of the larger federal military law enforcement complex. It's becoming a thing where it won't be a blue-helmeted UN soldier. It'll be the local deputy sheriff, you know, who has been armed to the teeth by Homeland Security and the Department of Defense. You know, they show up to serve bench warrants with a anti-personnel vehicle, and so that'll an armored personnel vehicle, and that's how they'll show up to serve the warrant to you, the notice to you that you haven't complied with the law requiring registration of firearms. It's if you want to know exactly how it'll go down, just read the history of the past 20 years or so of the United Kingdom and Australia, and that'll tell you exactly how it'll go down. You'll be it'll all be enforced by your local law enforcement acting on behalf of the federal government.
And of course, they may just kind of wait us out. There was the fellow who did the wargaming scenario, used to teach and still did teach at the military college in South Carolina, essentially talking about a revolution of Tea Partiers there and how that was going to play out in a scenario. But one of the things that he controversially said was, I will pry that out of your cold, dead hands. Hopefully, when you've died from natural causes, we're just going to wait this out. We're going to continually infringe on this until there's nothing left, and then we're going to come for the little cleanup operations that we need to do elsewhere. But one of the things I want to talk about under your article, you pointed out the irony of this happening on Christmas Eve, and you spent a lot of time talking about Christians' involvement and the understanding of where our rights come from, that they transcend government. They come directly from God. And of course, at the Berlin Wall, when it fell down, it was the Christians who en masse went to the wall after having met for 7 years and setting their churches up as a place where people could come and freely talk about politics openly and could come and pray for their country. After 7 years of that, they marched on the wall, almost like it was Jericho, except it wasn't 7 days, it was 7 years. It's a long process, it's a revival process. I want to talk to Joe Wolverton about the transcendent issues when we come back. Stay with us.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. We have on the line with us Joe Wolverton from the newamerican.com, talking about his article that the UN declares that they're going to put the arms trade treaty into effect on December 24th. Now, we've talked about the scope of this. We've talked about how clever the government has become in their gun control efforts, how they have focused on ammunition. And, of course, we talked about how they early on stopped brass recycling from the military because, of course, the military makes their own ammunition. They stopped that and then restarted it after senators protested that. But then it appears we have information. It looks like they may have continually stop that and are recycling that rather than putting it back into the market. But of course, as Nico reminded me, you know, the whole thing with the DHS that Paul Joseph Watson broke here at InfoWars, the fact that they're buying billions of rounds of ammunition and the ammunition shortages that they caused out of that, that was coming out of the general market because, as I mentioned before, the military makes their own ammunition. So they have understood that it's about ammunition. They're working on infringing our basic rights, but now this is coming for the entire thing. This is full spectrum gun control, registration, ammunition, parts, everything. Denying the right of individuals to own weapons and then also putting in an enforcement mechanism saying that they will enforce it with the UN, although they may have the local police working for them. I want to go back to Joe and Joe, one of the things that we didn't talk about in the last segment, of course, was the aspect of the transcendent right that we have, the fact that the Constitution just merely recognizes those. These are rights that we possess as human beings from our Creator. Going back to the Declaration of Independence, that understanding of our rights. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. I tell people all the time when I give speeches that there are books that if you want to be part of what's going to happen, if you want to be part of taking this country back to the place it needs to be, the place it was destined to be, then you've got to read some of these books that the founders read that informed them and taught them from the cradle that we are endowed. They did not create this idea. Thomas Jefferson did not out of the blue, decide that we were endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. He discovered this from very little. And it's funny to understand that from the time that the federal government took control of education, all of these people, all of their writings, people that most of your viewers probably haven't heard of, these people, Emmerich de Vattel and Jean-Jacques Burlamaqui and Samuel Pufendorf and Algernon Sidney, these people that were all over the writings and journals of our founding fathers were completely scrubbed from the notion of history, mainly to keep the idea out of our minds that we are endowed by our Creator with certain rights. And among those is the right to protect our life. And Alexander Hamilton explained it very well in the Federalist Papers, number 27 and 28, that the purpose is to throw off tyranny. John Locke, he learned it from John Locke as well. And John Locke learned it from those other guys that...
Well, they could even go. They could even go, Joe, to the Bible, couldn't they? And have a bit of a revival to understand that we have to stand up for the defenseless, for those who are being oppressed. It was Jesus who overthrew the money changers, got angry about that. Why is there no anger on the part of Christians when we see oppression, when we see oppression coming from our own government? Too often, I see Christians give government a carte blanche to do whatever they want to because of a misunderstanding of Romans. And we've had pastors on to talk about this many times, but that's what I think it initially stems from, is just a misunderstanding of the lines of authority and a lack of compassion for individuals.
I think you're exactly right. I think Jesus in the Bible, as I mentioned, the article in Luke chapter 22 commanded his followers to purchase a sword. I think Paul in his writings specifically said that it is our Christian duty to protect ourselves and protect our loved ones. And they understood
very well. I wish we could go further, but we're out of time. I know you can't continue it. Thank you so much for joining us. Joe Wolverton, newamerican.com. Stay with us. We'll be taking your calls right after the break.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're in Austin. Of course, early in the program, we talked to Paul Joseph Watson from the UK. We talked to Lionel about the rules of engagement, one aspect of the lawlessness that we see, the lack of respect for the Constitution. Of course, we just finished talking to Joe Wolverton from the New American about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. Brings up tremendous questions about what the real law of the land is. Are we going to allow these people, under the pretense of following the law, to do whatever they please? And essentially, I believe that's what the UN Arms Treaty represents. We've had John Kerry sign it, but we haven't had the Senate ratify it. So it isn't even a real treaty as far as the American people go. But it is a very dangerous piece of legislation that is full spectrum gun control. They may try to enforce it. Obama has said that he's going to go through with his climate change agenda, whether or not the Republicans like it. He has absolutely nothing but contempt for our legislative process, for Congress. And of course, Congress is aiding and abetting that by being passive. We know that John Boehner, Mitch McConnell have no problem with this kind of dictatorial power. They would like to see the Republicans in control of the levers of power. So they're helping to create this monolithic megastate, hoping that they're going to have the levers one day. But we're also going to be talking to Jerome Corsi at the bottom of the hour about the very executive order that many people have said Obama ought to clearly be impeached for. You know, he said, "I changed the law for you," when he's talking to some demonstrators. Then tried to walk that back and said, "Oh, I was just speaking colloquially. I didn't really mean I'd literally changed the law." No, he really did. Except that he didn't sign even his executive order. Jerome Corsi looked at the executive order and he realized that it's never been filed with the archivists. It was never signed. He's verified that. That's up on the Drudge Report today. We're going to be talking to him at the bottom of the hour about his research. Of course, we've got a dictator who doesn't even bother to sign his executive orders, but there may be more to it than that. I want to go back to your calls. We were just talking about gun control, full spectrum gun control, coming after not only the rights to own guns, but also coming after the guns, coming after the ammunition, coming after the parts, full registration, and then saying the UN reserves the right to come in as peacekeepers and take those guns away from you. I want to go to Rich in Oregon. You said you wanted to talk about guns, Rich? Go ahead.
Hey, David, how are you today?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
My question is to you. Actually, I have two questions. First of all, doesn't it say when the government in our Constitution becomes lawless that the people of Americans, we do not follow the laws anymore as to what the government is breaking? Am I correct? Am I right?
Yes.
Saying it wrong?
Yes. And I think there are a number of ways that haven't been tried legally and peacefully. That's why I'm concerned about people who want to immediately go out and take direct action. We see how people have reacted to the looters in Ferguson, attaching that, even when they attach it to something that some people might support, an excessive case of police brutality or force. They still don't support that because they don't understand what the problems are there. I think there's a lot more education that needs to be done. I want to see people standing up in juries and nullifying laws. That only takes one person to do that in a jury. If I don't see people doing that in juries, I don't think they're going to have my six if I want to come out and start using force. I want to see people at the state level, sheriffs, state legislators, I want to see them using the powers of nullification. Joe Wolverton has talked quite a bit about that, the New American, talking about nullification. That is a rightful remedy, and we need to have some kind of, we need to have faithful people, people who are faithful to the principles this country was built upon, to be leaders, to have some kind of a power structure in there. Hang on, we got to come up to a break. I don't want to cut you off. I won't let you have a chance to respond. So hold on the phone there, Rich in Oregon. We'll be right back with your calls, and we're going to have Jerome Corson at the bottom of the hour talking about the contempt that Obama has for our rule of law, not even bothering to sign his own dictates or file them. We'll be right back.
He aligns himself with the truth, and it's time for you to choose a side. You're listening to Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in Austin. We were just taking some calls in the last segment, and we ran out of time. We had Rich from Oregon talking about gun control. Of course, in the last hour, we were talking to Joe Wolverton from the New American about the UN declaring that they're going to put into effect their arms trade treaty on December the 24th. Now, there's a lot of countries that have signed on to that treaty. Actually, the U.S. hasn't. Only our Secretary of State has signed it. That's not the way you ratify a treaty, and you can't ratify a treaty that conflicts with our guaranteed constitutional rights. But they do a lot of things under cover of law, a lot of things illegally we've seen our government do and get away with it, because we've got a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that are complicit in this. And, of course, we're going to be talking at the bottom of the hour to Jerome Corsi about Obama's recent executive order bypassing Congress. As he said, he changed the law, and that's what he meant, and that's what he really did. He did change the law, but he didn't even bother to sign his executive order. Jerome Corsi reported on that on WND, and of course, Drudge Report picked it up. We're going to talk to Jerome Corsi at the bottom of the hour, but right now, I want to go back to Rich in Oregon. Rich, we didn't have time for you to come back and finish your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, the only thing I was thinking about, David, is, first of all, with the UN Treaty, I don't know anything about the UN being part of the United States, except for they'd like to be, I guess. I'm a U.S. citizen born and raised here. Mm-hmm. However, I'm somebody that will not comply with anything such as gun control.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that it's an infringement upon my rights, number one. I know I'm not the only one that stands alone on that thought. Also, two, how are they going to enforce that when over 200 million Americans are armed? Also, even when the police are out of control like that, I mean, you know what? You never know if you're going to get shot when you get stopped or if you're going to jail and you've never done nothing in your life.
Well, I understand, but I think, Rich, the dangerous thing is they've gotten a lot more subtle and clever about the way they're approaching it, and that is they're focusing on ammunition. We've seen this with the massive purchases out of the civilian market with DHS. We've seen it with the dry up of the recycled brass out of the military. We've seen it with the lead bans. So that's what they're working on. They're working on, they may I don't know if they'll be able. I don't think they're going to be able to push something like the UN Arms Trade Treaty through because it's too much at once. But they're coming at it from a process of infringement. Our founders understood that they would not move against us all at once. They would typically come a little bit at a time. But who knows? They may get bold enough that they may try to just go for the whole enchilada all at once. We'll see. I hope they don't do that because that's a lot of people's line in the sand. Thank you so much, Rich in Oregon. Let's go to Aaron in Alaska. I think it's Alaska, right? You wanted to talk about the treaty?
Yeah, it's actually Omaha, but...
Okay.
Go ahead. Great talk to you, David. I just want to say that when my dad was my age, he was able to buy a fully automatic AK-47 with a 100-round clip. I mean, you're exactly right when they say that they're subtle. They are slowly coming at us, and the last caller mentioned... you know, we have a lot of armed citizens. Well, I mean, it's just, it's going to be piece by piece like it has been. And You just said a lot of people's line in the sand a week ago when Alex was asking the question, was that this treaty going through? And a lot of people don't believe that Agenda 21 isn't real. The main critics, because it's not a ratified, signed, voted on law. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they don't need that.
No, actually, Agenda 21 is just that. It's an agenda. What they do is they come up with these goals and processes, and then they rely on a RAND Corporation process to enact that at the local level. And it actually even manipulate people. That's part of the RAND process, to manipulate the local population to believe that they actually had input on this, that this was actually their idea, that they signed onto it. And yet it's the same agenda that's being replicated in all these different areas. So it's a very subtle thing. And we're seeing this, of course, with the gun control. It's also a very subtle, very gradual thing. It's very concerning, and people need to go back. And as Joe Wolverton was talking about, they need to understand their foundations. They need to understand why this is there. They need to understand the basis of our rights, that our rights are not granted by government. Government grants privileges. It doesn't grant us rights. We have rights as human beings, as creatures of our God. Going back to the Declaration of Independence is something that really resonates with people when you explain it to them. But of course, they're getting exactly the opposite information in the government schools. That's why the government puts itself in control of education, puts itself in control of the schools. Thank you so much, Aaron. Let's go to Doug in Ohio. Doug, you said you had a nonviolent solution?
Absolutely. Hi, David. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you.
I want to say thanks for you guys doing the great reporting you do and putting yourselves in jeopardy for all the things that could go wrong being an employee of Alex Jones, because he's one of the greatest people ever. But
I'll tell you what. One of the things you need to understand is that we are all in jeopardy. Okay? Everybody needs to understand they're being spied on. I mean, we know we're being spied on, but everybody needs to understand that. When they understand that it isn't black versus white, it isn't urban versus rural, that's when things are going to change, when people come together and realize this is a broad-based attack by a few people on the vast majority of us who just really want to live our lives and be left alone. Go ahead. You want to talk about the nonviolent solution?
Yeah. And also, I had a couple other things on the guns, too. But the nonviolent solution, you know, I'm an electrician, and I do a lot of driving. And, you know, I'm driving down the road, dreaming. I said, hey, what is the most powerful industry in the United States besides government?
Go ahead.
Trucking. Mm-hmm. The trucking. And it's still ran by the people. My thing of it is we should be advertising, promoting. We need to get the truckers on board. They're going to shut this country down. We're in deep, deep trouble. Talk is over.
Oh, let me tell you, as a trucker, you've got something on coming up in just, I would say, within the next 5 years, definitely within the next 10 years. They're going to go to self-driving cars, and trucks are going to be one of the first places they're going to do it. It's going to be decimating to everybody that's in the transportation industry. I mean, part of this fight that's going on with Uber and the taxi companies, I understand that for the longest time, taxi companies have used government control to shut out their competition. They used it to shut down jitney services at the very beginning of the existence of automobiles. They put minority businesses, minority taxi companies, independent companies are called jitney taxis. They put them out of business, even though they didn't want to go to those areas because of the violence in those areas. You had small entrepreneurs who were black, for example, that would go into those areas, that would take the risk. They wanted to serve those areas, but they outlawed it using the taxi system. Now you've got this fight with Uber and the taxi companies, and you've got a lot of local governments that are pushing back against Uber. And I see a lot of conservatives and libertarians taking the side of Uber, not understanding where this is eventually going to go. They're not just going to put out the taxi companies. Uber has said they want to get rid of their own drivers. They're looking for drivers right now, but he has gone on record saying, you know what makes our service expensive, what makes taxis expensive? It's that other dude in the car. Once we get rid of him, we become cheap. And we become so cheap that we make private ownership of cars go away. So it's not just your right to protect yourself, but it's your right to be able to move without government control, government monitoring of your computer-controlled car. And I think that's something that's very concerning. But, of course, it's going to hit people in the transportation industry like you the hardest, the earliest.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not a trucker. I am an electrician.
Okay. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay. But my thing of it is we need to Google bomb. We need to be on the CBs. We need to be in the truck stops. We need to be advertising InfoWars on their media sites where the truckers go all the time. We need to get the truckers involved because, look, this country is going to be shut down. It's inevitable. Yes. I say let's shut it down on our terms, David.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
The truckers can shut this country down. We can bankrupt all these criminal corporate thieves, and we can tell our government, we run this country, not you, and we can put them in fear. And I just don't know. That's what I'm thinking. And I could be right or wrong, but as of right now, it's the only industry in the U.S. that is ran by the people that has that much power. Actually, more power than two country standing armies, I believe, the trucking industry has.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my point on that. Also, I wanted to say that because I called in one other time. I've not called in 15 years. I've been listening forever. And I called in and I got 20 seconds and I went over the Drudge Report. And I just want to say, and I need you guys, your reporters back there, to go to the, it's called the Competitive Enterprise Institute, or you can Google how Matt Drudge and other Obamacare victims can escape the Liberty Tax. And if you read that article and you scroll down under the Obamacare guidelines, it exempts four what they call health care sharing ministries, which are exempt from Obamacare. And yes, if you get insurance through them, you don't have to pay the fine.
Yes, Samaritan Ministries is one, Medicare, Medishare, something like this, another one. Those are Christian ministries. And yeah, you can opt out taking the option of doing it on a religious basis. And those are great ministries. We've belonged to Samaritan Ministries. They essentially are helping each other by sending their premiums directly to the person who has a need each month. You pay a small annual, and it is a small annual fee to handle the administrative stuff of it. But most of your money is going directly to people that you know what their problem is. You can send them money. They tell you what their problem is so you can pray for them. It's a great ministry, and it also gets you out of this Obamacare situation. Did you want to say anything else about that?
I just wanted you guys to report on that. That's all. Just cover it and maybe explain it to people so maybe they could go there and avoid sure. this, because I'm a business owner too. But also, I got a question and then I got a statement. One, the 22 ammo, it was like impossible to get. Now 22 mags are impossible to get. You can get the 22 longs, you know, so you can go in your backyard and play around. I want to know you can get the 223s, the 5.5, you know, you can get all the ammo, but
we're almost
22,
out of time.
I don't
Make it quick.
Understand why.
Why you were saying shortages also, and certain things like that? Yeah, well, I don't know, except that I know they understand that they need to take away our ammunition. We're going to be right back. More of your calls. We're going to have Jerome Corsi at the bottom of the hour. Thank you so much, Doug. He's going to talk about Obama not signing his orders.
This holiday, no matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try. You
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. In this next segment, we're going to try to get through as many callers as we can. And then joining us at the bottom of the hour is Dr. Jerome Corsi, writer for WND. And, of course, he has discovered that Obama did not sign his executive order. We're going to talk to him about what's behind that. But right now, I want to go back to your calls. Let's go to Dean in Florida. You had a comment about the executive order that we're going to be talking about in the next segment. Go ahead.
Yes. How you doing, Dave?
Doing good.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of points, but addressing the executive order, what it seems to me from what I understand about government and having, you know, lived 51 years, I really think that it's obviously not Obama who's doing this all on his own. I think it's important to recognize this is a conspiracy between all three branches of the government.
Oh, yes. Yes, they could easily stop it.
What's going on here is the House and the Senate and the President are all bought and paid for, mm-hmm. and they are doing the will of those who we do not see. I mean, the invisible or shadow type of government.
Yes.
So we're really an oligarchy. We're not what we appear to be, and it's quite unfortunate.
And let me interrupt you for a second there and say I teased the interview last night. We're going to air it in full on Monday night, but I talked to Greg Morris, who's somebody that was involved with the SNL scandals from the very beginning, and he's made this exact point. He's done a lot of detailed research, just as Dr. Corsi has on this executive order. He's done a lot of detailed research on exactly what happened and what created this mortgage crisis that we experienced beginning in 2008. He's come up with some very specific documented claims. He's filed RICO statutes. He also explains in this interview how this is the largest case of tax evasion and security fraud we have ever seen in this country. And he has a freeway if you want to stand up and be counted. You know, as we said earlier when we were talking to Lionel, people who get frustrated, sometimes they just get even more frustrated if they don't have a goal, if they don't have a course of action, if they just show up to protest. He's got something to put it right in their face, to expose this to the public. If we get enough signatures behind the 15,000 pages of documents that he's produced to produce this and have some hearings and congressional hearings on this. Anyway, you need to listen to that interview. I won't plug that anymore, but go back to your point that you were making about this being a full spectrum process.
Well, it was actually one of four quick points. Mm-hmm. So I'll do this as fast as I can. It's quite obvious. That what's going on here is absolutely it's a conspiracy, and these congressmen. It doesn't matter who you vote for anymore. You can vote for. You can vote for any of these people. All of these people are doing and are going to do the bidding of those who truly control everything
and look the other way.
So,
yes.
Yeah. And okay. And the other, if I could go on to two other points, real
sure.
quick.
Sure. Okay? Go ahead quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I also wanted to say that. One of the things that's very important for us to do, and important for all the radio talk show hosts to do that are truly liberty minded, is it's very important for us to publicly call on all law enforcement agencies to obey the Constitution of the United States as put forth by the founders, and to absolutely disregard, no matter what they're told, disregard any illegal orders that they are given.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even if it costs them their job. And
we just had a story a couple of days ago about officers in Normal, Illinois filing lawsuits, several officers filing lawsuits saying that they've been given quotas, not only just for things like traffic tickets, but given felony quotas that they needed to file against people. And I said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to make up charges against people just to meet your quotas, to show that we're accomplishing something. So they filed, these rank and file officers have filed a lawsuit against their own police department. We need more people like that. And I think it's important to make that call out there and to support people when they do the right thing. Go ahead.
Yes. And yeah, that's extremely important. And, as we see, police are law enforcement's getting very, very tough on the population, and they really need to be getting tough on the ones who are really doing wrong, which not going to do, which is the people on the top. The last point I wanted to make real quickly was in regards to reporting on protests, especially Ferguson and of course.
Hurry, we're just about out of time. Yep, hurry.
Yeah. The only thing I wanted to say was it's important to note that that's what's being shown. When you see vandalism and stuff like that,
Yes.
This may not be protest.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, they turned the other way when it was vandalism because somebody was excited or upset about a sporting event. We're going to be right back with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host today. We have joining us now Dr. Jerome Corsi. But before I go to him, I want to let you know that we have the Cyber Week specials at our site today. Been going all week. I don't know how much longer these are going to last. We have free shipping store-wide. We have 30% off of all super male and super female products. We have 20% off of Silver Bullet. And, of course, that's in limited supply. Once it's out, it's going to take us probably another 6 weeks to get that back. And a special, if you get four Silver Bullets, you get one free. So that's 20% off plus free shipping. And, of course, we've got a special that's our annual Christmas special on Prison Planet membership. Normally $59.99. Now it's $29.95, 7 months for free. That's only $2.50 a month. You can share it with up to 20 other friends now, not just a dozen, but 20 other friends. And that's something that supports our operation. That's where I normally hang out is in the nightly news. And that will, of course, be delivered to your home for free if you get that on the internet. And it will let you every weeknight at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, get the news as it's breaking instead of waiting for it to be posted later on. And, of course, you will have access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. Is this an info war? The best way you can wake people up, I think, is with these documentaries. And, of course, keeping them awake as to what's happening on a nightly basis with the news. Now, going to Dr. Corsi. Of course, he is a senior staff writer for WorldNet Daily, WND. He's also an investigative reporter, emphasis on the investigative part, because he went down and looked at the actual executive order to see if it was filed, to see if it was signed. Guess what? It wasn't. What's behind that? Does Obama have so much contempt for the process that he doesn't even bother to sign his edicts anymore? Or is there something else there? Is he trying to distance himself from something that is impeachable? I want to get Dr. Corsi's take on that. Dr. Corsi, thank you for joining us.
A great pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
This is a very interesting case and is picked up by the Drudge Report. You've been a couple of days with this, and you verified with the National Archives librarian, Jeffrey Hartley, that yes, there has been no documentation filed about this executive order. Tell everybody about that.
Well, it started, I got tipped off by a good friend on Wall Street who called me up yesterday very early in the day and said, you know, he couldn't find the executive order that Barack Obama signed implementing the speech on November 20th when Obama addressed the nation and said he was going to recommend this deferred prosecution for the basically the illegal immigrant kids who have come into the United States. Mm-hmm. And to keep families together, basically. And I said, well, let me look for it. I started looking around. I said, well, you know, I can't find it either. So about halfway through the day, I realized that there was some sleight of hand being played here by the White House, because what Obama had done was give the impression, the White House gave the impression. I mean, I'm getting the press releases from the White House, the pool reports. I'm looking through those. The general impression is that there's going to be an Obama executive order signed. Obama flies on the 21st to Vegas in the airplane. He signs two executive orders on immigration.
Wow.
And pool reporters are allowed to watch this, but no print reporters or reporters that would ask questions are allowed into the compartment in the air at Air Force One where President Obama is making the signatures. And so everybody just assumed that those were the executive orders implementing the deferred prosecution to allow these 5 million work authorization visas to be given to the parents of the Dreamers.
Yeah, that's what everybody was talking about. It's like a massive expansion of the Dreamer Act. Right. Everybody was talking about that. Everybody was saying he signed this executive order, and he's going back and forth saying that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because the two he signed had nothing to do with this. It had one we created a task force to study new immigrants coming in the United States. The other said the secretaries of state and the secretaries of DHS should get together and find ways to save money and make more efficient the issuing of immigrant, non-immigrant visas. So neither one, and I found both of those in the, you know, presidential executive orders on the White House website filed appropriately. And I found the only implementing order had been the a memo written by the Department of Human Services, Jay Johnson head, that was a memo instructing that they were going to do deferred prosecution on this class of, you know, of Dreamer parents for 3 years, only 3 years. Hmm. And there was nothing else that did it. So I began really searching around and realized then that Johnson had signed this memo but had not filed it in the Federal Register, which is another problem because federal agencies making rules, new rules, are supposed to file them for comment in the Federal Register. So kind of the final couple steps I took were I contacted the Attorney General's office in Texas, Greg Abbott's office, because they had led the suit of 17 states filing against the Department of Homeland, against the Obama administration.
Yes.
And I decided I better figure out what that was about. Mm-hmm. And Abbott said, well, you know, they too had concluded there was no executive order. It was all based on a memo that Johnson signed on his own authority. So we then contacted the National Archives, and the National Archives confirmed that they too couldn't find an executive order. So this was all sleight of hand.
Obama never signed an amnesty order. It was a head fake, like his swearing to uphold the Constitution was a head fake, right?
I think I've got another piece coming out shortly that tries to put this all together. But I think that the Obama people realized at the White House that they did not have the authority. Finally, they figured it out. As Obama has been saying for years, to change the law, which is what he wanted to do. So he kind of shuffled it off to Jay Johnson and said, you change the law, and I'll make like I'm changing the law.
This is unbelievable. Here's a guy who, as we pointed out many times, he said 22 times, I'm not a dictator. I can't just arbitrarily change the law. Then he says, I changed the law. He talks about his executive amnesty that he's done. And then when he's heckled by people who wanted him to do more, he says, I changed the law for y'all. Well, and then he comes back and says this colloquial speech, and yet he didn't even bother to sign or file any of this stuff. That was all a head fake, right?
And so, you know, I think there's some serious legal ramifications of this, which is what I'm writing about today. But I mean, first of all, in the context, when I wrote the Obama Nation, it was 2008 about Obama. I said he was, you know, never experienced as an executive. He's a radical leftist, Saul Alinsky trained. You know, community organizer, and he'll tell you what you want to hear.
Yes.
And I think we're now living in the Gruber era after Jonathan Gruber, our MIT professor, has, you know, come out and blathered about how much smarter he is than all the rest of us. And he's so smart that he can pull off lying to us for our own good.
Yeah, we need to change his name and make it a verb. We say we Grubered the data, we tortured it in a purpose to lie and to deceive. And I guess we could say that Obama Grubered his executive order.
Obama Grubered amnesty. It's a story. Obama Grubered amnesty. He didn't do any executive order. All just a big head fake. I mean, thanks everybody for listening to the November 20th. Speech from the East Room of the Oval Office, nice big central hall behind him. It was really an impressive facade, you know.
This is amazing. Now, they said at the Texas Attorney General's office, Governor elect Greg Abbott said they were aware of this. I mean, what's the implication of this for the lawsuit they filed?
It's got some pretty serious implications. I mean, one of the implications are that Jay Johnson's out there on his own. And if anybody's going to get criminally prosecuted for spending money that wasn't authorized, You know, it'll be Jay Johnson now, because, and Obama can say, well, you know, I don't know what he did. He did whatever he wanted to do. I didn't tell him to do that.
Jay Johnson changed the law. I didn't change the law. Jay Johnson. I didn't build it. He did it. He did it.
It's the same thing Obama is saying about Lois Lerner.
Yeah. You
know, Obama gave speech after speech after speech saying how we got a Tea Party and, you know, Citizens United, and they're taking advantage of the tax deferred. And Lois Lerner says, well, I'll fix that. I'll make sure none of them get through.
Yeah.
So she creates an enemies list and starts discriminating, which is against the law, against political applications on political basis for tax-deferred status. Well, here, again, Obama gives out the message, this big speech, November 20th, and Jay Johnson says, oh, don't worry about that, Mr. President. You don't have to sign anything. I'll go ahead and do an executive order for it. You don't have to do an executive order. I'll do a memo. And so, I mean, the next thing we're going to do is Obama say, I'm going to give you an executive order, not sign one, put it in the drawer and say, I'll tell you what it means later on.
Well, you know, this is very troubling on a lot of different issues, because we really have hit into this Alice in Wonderland government that we've got here. Even my previous guest, Joe Wolverton, talking about the UN Arms Trade Treaty, they're saying they're going to declare that that's effective on December 24th. Now, we haven't ratified that in the Senate, and yet we've had John Kerry, Secretary of State, sign the UNATT. And, of course, it brings up a lot of questions about really what they're doing under color of law, things that they don't have legal authority to do, that they're just completely bypassing Congress, having department heads or having bureaucracies take action, and then knowing that the Department of Justice has got their back if anybody comes after them for criminal operations, like we see with the IRS.
Well, exactly. I mean, the thing that really amazed me about the immigration, you know, the non-executive order, executive order, was that the White House took so many pains to, you know, to cover this. First of all, we go back very carefully. They only said executive action, which means just, you know, a policy statement, not executive order. But nobody picked that up, especially when Obama flew the next day to Las Vegas and made this big deal of signing two executive orders on immigration, letting them photograph all that. So, of course, everybody thought he was signing the executive orders that implemented the Dreamers amnesty for the parents that he had promised the night before in the speech from the East Room. But that isn't what he did. He created a couple task forces and told people to go study things. I mean, it's ridiculous.
When I look at this, it reminds me of these cases people are looking at of excessive police force, where they're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, we don't really have a prosecutor who's really interested in investigating this. You know, we've got Obama, who is essentially killing, or has killed, many segments of this economy, killed our legal system, is trying to kill our economy. And of course, we got a Department of Justice prosecutor who's basically sitting on the sidelines and saying, I don't care if you use the IRS as against your political enemies. I don't care if you do this. I don't care if you do that. Basically giving him a pass. This is the entire country that's being killed with this kind of lawlessness done under color of law.
And making it look like law procedures are being used. That's what's so offensive about what Obama's done here. And it made me wonder, too, you know, I've also written about Vice President Biden has been to the Inter-American Bank, and he said we're going to give refugee status to the next wave of so-called unaccompanied minors coming from Central America. Well, refugee status is a term of the United Nations, and so I'm wondering if Obama's going to apply UN law and say these kids get into the United States with a real pass and a special route to citizenship because they're refugees under the UN. I mean, you know, you could even start sending airplanes down to El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala at the expense of the federal government to pick these kids up as refugees to save them the indignity of coming across Mexico to illegally cross into the United States.
Oh, yeah. I think some people have suggested that. You know, that's the thing, is we cannot take and care for all of the poor of the world. We can try to, in the past they have, individuals have, the government has tried to help people to get a leg up, to get started on in their own economy, but basically no country can take on everybody as Obama wants to do, unless you want to deliberately implode the economy in a Cloward and Piven strategy. And of course, That, I believe, is what is there. So he's directly attacking our economy, attacking our energy industry, going to China, negotiating this deal with them, saying that we're going to reduce our energy output by 25% over the next 11 years. But China can continue to build these dirty power plants because this is all in the name of global warming. Yet global warming doesn't seem to be a problem when the Chinese are doing. They can continue to build their energy production for the next 16 years and then cap it. No decline for them, even after they've been building it for 16 years. So we see that he's trying to take down the economy. He's trying to take down our legal system. And, of course, the Republicans are playing ball with him, aren't they?
Well, I mean, first of all, it also means you can't believe anything Obama says. It's a point I've been making from the beginning. This guy will tell you what you want to hear. He'll create an illusion that he's being illegal when behind the scenes, you know, he's got this, you know, the slippery deal going on with Jay Johnson, you know, hey, wink, wink. I mean, two organized criminals couldn't have done it better. Let's go outside and talk. We don't want to talk this deal in here. Don't let it be you that made the deal, boss. We'll let this guy down the road make the deal.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's all the insulation, the...
Well, you know, Dr. Corsi...
I didn't sign anything.
Yeah. Well, when I look at that... In a sense, I see a parallel to what our legislative branch has been doing for a long time with the regulatory agencies. I know Rand Paul has addressed this to some extent with a lot of reforms because they don't want to take the heat for a lot of unpopular things. So in many cases, what they'll do is they'll create an agency, give it broad mission strokes, but not write the actual laws and let the laws be written by these unelected bureaucrats. And then if they step over, the Congress can come in like knights on white horses and say, we're here to rescue you from this regulatory overreach. They've been putting this off to the regulatory agencies in the same way that Obama is putting this executive order off on Jay Johnson, haven't they?
Well, and there's a comparability. I mean, certainly the EPA and eliminating coal on the basis of Clean Air, Clean Water Act. I mean, that's legislating.
Yes.
And here you basically got to this is legislating. This is saying, you know, a class of people that should be deported. We're just not going to deport them. I mean, this is not prosecutorial discretion. Prosecutorial discretion to me means, you know, I'm the district attorney and I'm not going to bring this case to criminal trial because there's not good enough evidence. It doesn't mean that, hey, anybody who goes through a red light's okay with me because I don't have time to prosecute anybody.
That's right. Absolute criminal behavior. But again, as I say, I think we see this also in the case of regulatory agencies, and it's something that's been going back through several administrations. This has become an established fact. I mean, we look at this situation.
Obamacare. Obamacare is the same way. Obamacare, they passed, you know, a bill that was already humongous, and then it gets expanded in the bureaucracy. So, you know, a pile of paper 6 foot tall becomes a pile of paper 26 feet tall after the regulators get finished with it.
That's right.
IRS is the same way. Who could read the tax code anymore after you get finished with the IRS regulations?
When Nancy Pelosi said, we have to pass it so we can find out what's in it, I don't think she was simply talking about what was in the regulations. I think she was talking about once they let this gigantic regulatory monster that they're going to create work at it for a while, then they're going to see what it looks like. But they're basically punting that off to them. We got to take a break. We're going to be right back with Dr. Jerome Corsi, and then we'll take your calls in overdrive. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big
Welcome back
John.
To the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're talking Big to Dr. John. Jerome Corsi of WND.com, investigative reporter, as well as a senior staff writer, expert on political violence and terrorism. He uncovered the fact that, of course, Obama's executive order for amnesty was really just a head fake. He never signed anything, never filed anything. And, of course, Dr. Corsi, as you point out, Jay Johnson has put something there, but he has not followed the procedures for new regulations in terms of the guidelines to have a comment period and that sort of thing. So where are we now with this? Now that Obama's been lying to everybody, saying that he was changing the law, that he was doing an executive order for amnesty, and then there isn't any executive order. There's just an order from Jay Johnson to say that they're not going to take action against people who are here. What does that say about this lawsuit that was filed by the 17 different states, are they still focused on Obama? Or are they going to focus on Jay Johnson at DHS? What happens with this?
Well, the lawsuit focuses on both, and it's really asking for injunctive relief. It's asking to have the U.S. District Court issue an order that just stops all this for a while to sort it out. I think that the...
But then, of course, if they stop it, I mean, what their executive order is saying is that they're not going to do anything. So, I mean, can we force them to obey and enforce the law? I mean, an injunction, yes.
The injunction by stopping the implementation of Jay Johnson's memo would mean that they could not start issuing these work authorizations or give assured non-deportation status to the parents of the Dreamers for 3 years, which is what Johnson's memo said. Mm-hmm. So that all stops. They can't hire a bureaucracy. They can't begin issuing these cards. They can't open offices. They can't process anything if the court just stops it. Now, a stopping motion kind of tries to prevent any more damage to be done. You could still have defunding action by the Congress. You could have legal action. There could be criminal investigations, whether Jay Johnson had authorized the spending of money that was not authorized by Congress. That is a criminal violation under U.S. law. Mm-hmm. You know, there are various actions that could be taken, but it depends. I think the political reality is that in the lame duck Congress, you're not going to get very much settled. In other words, this is going to be a pass the buck experience until January. And if the 17 states did get a injunctive relief, then you couldn't get to January with the program already being implemented. It would be in abeyance. Mm-hmm. So Congress would come in with Republican majorities, and I think the Tea Party and conservative voices within the Republican Party would have to steal a lot more the leadership of Boehner and McConnell when they come back and realize that, you know, they have a larger number of Republicans in both House and Senate, and they were elected because Obama's policies were repudiated. So you might get a tougher GOP Congress in January. Hmm. Even Boehner and McConnell are counting on.
Oh, and of course, what's going to happen, though, is that even if they can block them from doing some of these positive actions, and I know they had printed up 34 million cards to give people and so forth, yes, if they can stop them from issuing that kind of thing, still, the message that he put out there, that he was able to get out there with his head fake, is an incentive for more illegal immigration, knowing that at some point they're going to work out the details and these people are going to get to stay here with subsidies and that sort of thing.
I agree. It's a green light.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Corsi, and we're going to look forward to seeing what you uncover and seeing how this turns out. An amazing story. Stay with us right after the break. We're going to take the people who are on the line right now, try to get through as many of those calls as we can. We'll be right back.
Fix bayonets. We are now entering overdrive with your host, Alex Jones, broadcasting live from the front lines. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, I'm David Knight, and we're back to take some of your calls. I want to move through these quickly. We've had some people waiting on hold for quite some time. Let's go right away to Lisa in Illinois. Lisa?
Yes, I'm calling because my son was pulled over for blowing a stop sign that we still can't find where it exists. They put him on probation for a year.
Wow.
And told him he cannot have a firearm, possession of a firearm, so he has a firearms card and a gun.
Wow.
And I asked him, what do you want him to do with the gun? The court said he has to give it to somebody who has a firearms card. And I said, well, that would be me. And they said, well, do you live with him? I said, yes, I do. He said, you can't have it either.
Wow.
So they've instructed me to remove the gun from the house, and I don't understand how a gun has anything to do with a traffic violation.
Well, that's how they're expanding this. They're, you know, we heard in the wake of a lot of these shootings, conservatives who would normally be supportive of gun rights, saying, well, we need to look at people for psychological evaluation and take that away, take their guns away from them if there's some issue about that. But of course, who gets to decide that? What kind of a due process do you have? And of course, you say it was for a stop sign violation? They came after your son?
They wouldn't arrest him. He told them, arrest me, take me to jail. They said, no, we will not. He said, well, if you're taking my truck and you're not arresting me, how do I get home? They said, walk.
They confiscated his car?
Yes.
For a stop sign violation. What part of Illinois are you in? Is this a state?
I'm in Joliet, city of Joliet.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Do you have jury trials there for traffic courts?
Yeah, he pleaded innocent, and the public defender came up and said, this is what we want. You will pay a $1,000 fine, and you will do 100 hours of community service. You will remove your gun from your home, and then he had to transfer the gun, which I did that for him.
But this was over a stop sign violation?
You're like, oh, we have a transfer form here. Oh, officer, here you go.
Yeah, but wait a minute. What was he found guilty of? Is breaking a going through a stop sign?
Yeah, and we can't find the stop sign. We keep asking him, where's the stop sign you claim is at this intersection? There's no stop sign there.
Wow.
They're like, oh, someone called it in. They seen him blow the stop sign at 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
People are calling in, report blown stop signs at 11 o'clock at night. I don't think so.
Yeah, there's definitely something else going on. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, that's just another illustration of how people can get railroaded. And we hear people all the time say, well, you should take the guns of people who have been found guilty of a felony. You know, it's a felony in Florida to release a helium balloon on certain beaches at certain times of the year. They charge one man down there with four felonies for releasing four balloons. Should he have all of his guns confiscated? Should he be considered a felon? Should he lose his voting rights or whatever? I'm so sorry that happened to you, Lisa. Let's go to Ned in Oregon. Ned?
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
A couple things. One is that the UN has no power over the U.S. Constitution. I don't care what they sign or anything like that. It has no power over the U.S. Constitution. And, you know, it's a very sacred document in that regards. But the other issue, too, about guns that I think is ludicrous is that there are millions and millions of guns out there that aren't registered.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing that can be done about it. They don't know where they're at. They don't know who has them or anything.
What they will do is they will strangle people by going after the spare parts, by going after the ammunition. Whether they get that through with the UN Arms Trade Treaty, that's the direction that they're going to start heading with this gun control legislation. And of course, I agree with you. There is no way that they can legally enforce a UN treaty that hasn't been even ratified by the Senate that conflicts with our Constitution. And yet, we see over and over again that under color of law, we see Obama doing a head fake on amnesty. We see them violating the law on so many different issues. Will they do it with us? Of course they will. They'll say that they have authority to do it, and they will have people who will back them up. I'm sorry I couldn't get to the other callers today. Tonight, 7 Central, 8 p.m., the nightly news. Join us then.